is sponsored by the law offices of Joe Pippin. Learn more at attypip.com.
Ask an attorney about Florida law. Ask an attorney. Just give him a call.
This is Ask an Attorney. All about Florida law with attorney Joe Pippin. If you have a legal question, call Joe right now in Tampa. Call 813-287-5700. Anywhere else, toll free at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. The law office is open. And now your host, Joe Pippin.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. The law office is open. Saturday morning, a little bit after 8 o'clock, yes, the law office is open. We're here to help you in any way we can. If you have a legal question, you know, it doesn't even have to be a legal question. I'm an attorney and I answer legal questions, but I also like just to help people with problems. So if you just have a problem I can help you with, it may not be a legal problem. Maybe I can give you something to think about, a different path to follow, maybe a better result. But I'm here to help you if I can, help you in any way I can. You have a toll-free number, which is 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. And if you have a legal question, it can be about wills, trust, probate, guardianship, power of attorneys, healthcare surrogates, living wills. This is a live show Saturday morning, and we're broadcasting today from Jacksonville. The show is on about 15 stations around Florida. Some of them, flagship station, I'm going to call it, is in Tampa. Well, we broadcast every other week from Tampa Studios, Salem Communications, 570-910, 860-930, a family of four stations there. They have FM components as well. There's a community station in Sun City Center, 96.3 FM, and also 100.1 FM in Sun City Center. Yeah, also, 100.1 also is an FM component of the Jacksonville station, WBOB, 600 AM on them. On your dial. Also, Haines City, WLVF, station I've been on for over 20 years, maybe 25 years or longer. Lots of stations carry the program. We also WTAN out of Clearwater. You're listening to Ask an Attorney. If you have a legal question, the phone lines are open. You have a toll-free number, which is 877-943-9673. Let's go to John. John calling in. Good morning, John.
Yes, good morning. I'd like to know, please, how does a will or trust affect investments that have a TOD or POD?
All right, John, what city are you calling from?
Newport Richey.
Newport Richey. Okay. Well, that's a great question, and the question is about transfer on death accounts and how is that different than a will or a trust. Well, first of all, if you have a transfer on death account, your will or trust does not control what happens to it when you die. So that is a way to avoid probate. Now, if you compare a trust versus POD, I would tell you that I think a trust is better because if you become incapacitated before death, which most of us do, the trustee of your trust can manage it for your benefit while you're living in a style of life that you're accustomed to. With a transfer on death, they can't really touch the account or anything happens with it usually until death. So somebody has to walk in with a death certificate to get to the money. If it's in a living trust, if it's in a living trust, then it avoids probate upon death and it can be used for your benefit while you're living. And a will, you throw a will in there, a will has nothing to do with an account that has transfer on death. Because a will only deals with, a will gets probated on assets that you have just in your name upon death. You know, so it doesn't, a will doesn't have any impact on a joint account, an account in a trust, or an account with a beneficiary on it.
I see.
So basically, to compare the two, I think a trust is a lot better than a transfer on death account because of the guardianship things. And transfer on death cannot be on every asset you own. Like transfer, you might be able to do a ladybird deed or something like that with a deed, but you can't really have a pure transfer on death like account like at a bank with a piece of real estate.
And if it's in a trust, then would the investments have to be retitled?
Yes, if you created a trust, the accounts would be retitled to, instead of John, it'd be John Trustee in the date of the trust. Just a real simple name change.
I see. And the investment company, of course, would have to be informed of that.
Yes. Yeah, so I, as a convenience for clients, I'll often send a copy of the trust if it comes up to the financial advisor. And inform them that you know how I do this with your permission, of course. I tell them you have a trust, and here's a copy of the trust, and please start the paperwork to get the account changed to the name of the trust. It's just simply adding the word trustee behind your name and the date of the trust.
I see.
Your trust has your social security number, so it's not a different entity. You file the same tax return. There's no extra tax work or record keeping when you have a trust. You just follow your normal 1040. You and the trust are the same entity, same tax number.
Okay, well, you've answered that extremely well. Many, many thanks.
Well, thank you. Thanks for calling. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
If you have a legal question, hey, I'm here to help. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin. You have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. If you'd like to learn more about estate planning, I do have a free estate planning poster sheet, large double-sided sheet I'd love to give you. All you have to do is ask for it. So you can send me an email, joe@attypip.com. That's joe@attypip.com. You can call our toll-free office number, 1-800-226-3529. That's 1-800-226-3529. And we have offices all over Florida. We have offices, two offices in Pinellas County, two in Polk, two in Hillsborough, two in Pasco. We have offices in Claremont, Leesburg, the Villages. We have offices in the Polk County, the Davenport area, Lakeland. We have offices in the St. Augustine, Ponte Beach, or Jacksonville area. And we don't charge anything for first appointments. So we... be more than glad to review documents that you have and advise you what we think. All right, you're listening to Ask Attorney, toll-free number for you to call, 877-943-9673. Let's go to Lynn, who's calling. Lynn, where are you calling from this morning?
Sarasota,
okay. What can I do for you?
I have a seller's disclosure, was signed on 4/1/21 by one of the sellers and on 3/31/21 by the other seller. The issue is the spa hot tub. On the seller's disclosure, it does say there is a spa, yes. Has the pool ever leaked since you own? No. Are you aware of any conditions that could affect the use and function? No. So we are at the inspection, and I was met by the realtor that said the spa will not be looked at, even visually looked at, because when it was turned on, there's an issue with a breaker. So we're having the expert come in next Wednesday. Well, the issue is I have a decision to make on Tuesday.
Well,
what are my options?
Okay, is the closing set for Wednesday?
The 30th. No.
Well, let's say...
The 30th of June.
Okay, so normally what would happen, even if you went to closing, you could have them hold money in escrow, you know, more than enough to fix the problem. Okay. And then when they determine exactly what it was and what it would cost, there would be money in escrow to cover it. So the seller can agree. Okay. To, the seller can agree to that, or you might have the right to cancel the contract if you can't come to an agreement, just because of the fraudulent okay. statement they didn't know, because they probably did know.
Of course they did.
Yeah. So you could have your own electrician come in and look at it yourself, perhaps, but you could definitely say, I want you to hold $3,000 in escrow until this is resolved. I mean, you want to hold more than...
What if they say no, but I still want the house? Because I know they knew.
Well, then if you went ahead to closing, you'd probably only have the recourse of suing them. Hopefully, yeah, because, in today's world, too, if you don't buy the house, somebody else will, or maybe even at a higher price.
Of course.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course.
Yeah,
of course.
So you got
what's going to happen.
You got an economic decision to do, whether you want to proceed, basically let them get away with lying. what's more important to you is to either get the house and not worry about it or hold their feet to the fire or go ahead and close and then file a lawsuit afterwards, probably.
Okay. Would you be able to help me with the lawsuits?
Oh, I have
or how about mediation? About this, sir? There's a mediation clause. When would I ask for mediation? Can I do that on Monday after my second inspection?
I'd have to see the contract probably to answer that, but most likely yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a real estate attorney in my firm that would do a litigation or mediation like that. So you could contact me.
Okay, there is a mediation clause. In fact, everybody on this whole deal knows about this hot tub.
Mm-hmm.
All of the attorneys, I'm sure the attorney knows now. The and it's also a transactional. Mm-hmm.
So you have a valid contract signed by both parties.
Yes.
But the contract is subject to you having the right to inspect.
Correct.
Yeah. And you've inspected it and found something. So
the man wouldn't give me the report.
Yeah. You can advise them that you're going to proceed with the closing, but unless this can be resolved, there's going to be a lawsuit afterwards.
Okay. And lying on a seller's, I know I sold several homes in different states, and lying on a seller's disclosure did survive closing. I was warned when I was signing some things on my documents.
Mm-hmm.
And right there. And there's also another section, sir, in this disclosure that it says, is there anything else that you would like to say, not specifically addressed mm-hmm. in this disclosure statement? Big paragraph. They checked no. So, and I've been asking since May 1st if the hot tub worked.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you want for us to look at the contract, you can just contact. I'll give you the fax number, or can you scan an email? Or would you prefer fax?
I can.
Scan an email?
Yes, I can.
Okay. All right. So my email address is just joe@attypip.com.
Okay. Attypip. P as in Paul. I-T.
P-I-P, all P's like Paul. The first three letters of my last name, Pippin. So
okay.
joe@attypip, abbreviation for attorney, PIP.com.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
You've been so helpful.
All right, my pleasure. Thank
Bye.
You. All right, let's go to June calling. Hey, June.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. What can we do for you?
All right. Well, I have kind of an unusual situation. I'm in my 60s and have my husband's deceased. And I have a friend in Kansas that we've been friends for years, and he's never been married. And we decided we might want to get married. And so the interesting thing is that we don't want money from each other. We each have our own trust. We each have our own property. I'm a Florida resident. He is a Kansas resident. I have property in Florida and children in Florida and grandchildren in Tampa. And I do not want to give up my Florida residency because I come down here so much.
Mm-hmm.
And he understands he cannot give up his Kansas residency because he owns a farm up there. They have a big farm. Parents are deceased, and it's too much financial complication. Is there a way to legally be married and me maintain a Florida residency and he maintain a Kansas residency, and how will this affect our federal taxes?
The answer is yes, you can maintain a separate residence. I would strongly advise you to have a premarital agreement.
We would do that for sure. Yeah, I don't want his farm, and he doesn't want my property.
The premarital agreement can state that you'll maintain your Florida residency. He'll waive his right to the homestead. You'll be able to leave that to your kids. He can leave his assets and farm to his kids, and all that will be spelled out in the inventory of assets on the premarital agreement and establish that you're both going to maintain your residence in Florida, his in Kansas, and you can then probably each, with a little maneuvering, have your homestead. I don't know if there's a homestead in Kansas, but you'll be able to maintain your Florida homestead being a Florida resident. He has a farm business in Kansas, so I think he could justify the same there, probably.
Okay, and when his parents died, they put most of it in an LLC up there anyway, so, I don't want any part of it. The last question is, how will this affect my federal taxes and his federal taxes? Do we have to file? I assume we have to file separately as a married couple, which would increase both our taxes.
No, that's wrong. It doesn't matter where you live.
Wrong.
No. No, you're a husband and wife. It's federal. It's not state. So you might have to file. He might have to file a state income tax in Kansas. Florida doesn't have a state income tax. But
right.
The federal is federal. I mean, you're a married couple who can file jointly on the federal.
Okay, and I don't need to file a Kansas tax on my Social Security, do I?
No, because you're not. You won't even be a resident there, and a premarital agreement will establish all that.
Okay, well, great. You've been a big help. Thank you very much.
We have a family law attorney in our staff that can answer more questions for you. Her name is Catherine.
Catherine.
And she would be a great resource to answer any other questions you might have on this, or maybe even if you don't have an attorney, help you get your premarital agreement started.
Where is she located?
She's in Pinellas County.
Yeah,
this is the kind of thing where you could send you some what she needs to get started on the document. And basically, a family law attorney can only represent, in this case, you. And then the document would have to be reviewed by your future husband's attorney, because an attorney can't represent both sides without a bunch of waivers.
Right.
And it's not real smart to even do it then, because you each have spousal rights. In this case, you have... your part would be governed by Florida law, and he'd be concerned about whatever rights he's waiving in Kansas law, and the language would have to be in there. So probably have to work with an attorney there in Kansas to do it. But
he's fine with doing all that. We want to do it right. We don't want to cause any problems. We want to do it right. Last quick question: does it matter what state we get married in?
No,
it's going to go to a justice. Doesn't matter.
No, you could go down to the Cayman Islands and get married. It doesn't matter, really. It doesn't have to even be in the U.S. You could go to Las Vegas, of all places. You could have the Elvis wedding,
Maybe we'll do that.
Yeah.
Two old people getting married in Las Vegas. That'd be kind of funny.
Yeah.
Can you give me Catherine's? Do I just email you at your regular Joe?
Yeah, just email me just say you talk to me on the radio and you'd like to talk to Catherine, and get your phone number, and I have Catherine give you a call.
I will do that during business hours next week. I appreciate your help.
My pleasure. You have a great weekend.
Thank you, too.
You're listening to Ask an Attorney, All About Florida Law. Again, I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. The law office is open, and it's open for your question. Hopefully I can give you some peace of mind. And I had about three people here in Jacksonville yesterday tell me, I'm so glad I got my estate planning done, and this gives me such peace of mind, and now I can relax because I've got this one more thing checked off my bucket list. Hey, peace of mind is what it's all about. You know, you put things off a lot of times for no reason, and then you find out it didn't really cost that much. It could be done very quickly. You have great peace of mind. Phone lines are open. If you have a legal question, give me about any area of law. If I know, I'd be glad to share with you. If I don't know, I'll let you know I don't know. But I'll have a resource for you. I have an attorney friend who can help you that's not associated with my firm. And get you an answer. Toll-free number if you want to call the show. Open lines right now at 877-943-9673. I had a trust signing yesterday, and before they wanted to sign, they wanted all these questions answered, and they gave me, I don't know, a list of about 20 questions they wanted answered, which is fine. And I think a person who's gotten that deep into their document and has questions or concerns, you know, you spend the time to... So I called them actually before the meeting with their list of questions in my... And when I met with him yesterday, I said, you know, I really enjoyed your questions. And I like answering questions, of course, because I've been doing it on the radio for 37 years. And I know clients have questions. I said, "What? You know what I did with your list of questions? I sent them to my intern. And I said, look, this is a good training. These questions are good training for you. So what I want you to do is I want you to answer all of these questions in writing. And next week when I see you, I'm going to compare your answers with what I told the client the way I answered the questions." So the client really thought that was cool. I mean, now if she's just part of my training training for my intern. But I thought I'd share some of these with you today in between calls. And the phone lines are open right now. So if you want to call the show, you have an open line right now at 877-943-9673. So the first question they had was, will the trust and other documents be recorded? Well, one of the benefits of a trust is that it's a private document, so it doesn't have to be recorded. Very seldom, unless there's some unusual reason, does a trust have to be recorded. And privacy is a big feature of a trust, I think. I had a call from an attorney this week where a mother had omitted her son, and she had other children she left assets to. So the attorney called and wanted to have a copy of the trust. I said, "I'm sorry, your client was omitted from the distribution of the trust. The trust is a private document. Respectively, I'm not going to give it to you." So what's the attorney going to do now? He's going to realize he has a limited chance of getting it. He could possibly file a lawsuit to get it. But what I do if they push it too much is I offer to give them a copy of the first page and then a copy of the paragraph where the son was omitted. They have no business knowing what the assets are, who the other beneficiaries are, in my opinion. It's a private document. So will the trust and other documents be recorded? Other documents. Now, all wills get recorded. There's a statute that says your will must be filed within 10 days. When you do a trust, you get a will that just leaves everything to the trust. There's no really information in about distribution or anything. And if you did a trust and if you did a quitclaim deed, that would have to be recorded. Let's go to Jane in Haines City, and then I'll get back to some of these questions. Hey, Jane.
Hi. I wanted to ask you a question. If your name is not on your husband's credit card, and if he died, would you have to go ahead and pay for his cards or not?
Here's what I tell clients who come in and ask me that question when their husband died or wife died. I said, send the credit card bill back and write on it, husband or wife, whatever the case is, passed away without a probate estate. Mm-hmm. And send it back. And hopefully you'll send it back, and hopefully you won't hear from them again, and they'll write it off. Probate / or trust estate. Now, if husband and wife owned everything jointly, then the assets immediately became, in your case, the wife's assets upon husband's death, and the wife is not generally responsible for a husband's credit card debts unless she contractually obligated herself, you know, on the credit card contract. So medical bills and credit card bills, unless you contractually obligated yourself, send them back and say there are no assets available, no estate assets or other assets available in the deceased person's name to pay this debt.
Now, like a car, if you still own a car and it's in his name, would they take it back, or how do you do that?
Well, do you want the car, or do you want them to take it back?
No, I want the car. I just ask you in case it happens.
All right. Is there money?
You still have to pay for it.
Yeah.
I still owe for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a car is a unique, special, different type of asset in Florida, so a spouse can usually go to DMV with a death certificate, and the spouse has a right to the car. So the problem is, when you go there, you don't have the title because there's money still owed on it.
Yes, right.
So basically, you're going to have to figure out a way to pay the car off, or go to the bank and tell them, can you get the car in your name? You want to get it transferred to your name, and can you get the mortgage in your name? And will they help you with DMV to get the car transferred to your name instead of them having to take it back and so forth?
Okay. I've heard pros and cons about the bills and everything, and I wanted to make sure in case my husband or wife dies. You know, in Florida, it's different. So,
yeah.
I'm.
Are you listening to? Are you listening to 90.3 FM there in Haines City?
Yes,
Okay. All right, very good.
Thank you so much for all your help.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, let's go to Jim in Sarasota.
Hello, Joe.
Hey, Jim.
Hello. Yes, how you doing?
I'm doing great. And you?
Well, better now. I had the windshield problem a couple months ago. They told me.
Did we lose you? Did we lose him? Well, Jim,
did nothing for me.
Oh, Jim, you faded out on me here. So, okay, I remember the windshield problem where you couldn't get one replaced. It was a Lincoln.
Exactly.
It was an Aviator, right?
Yeah.
See, I remember that.
Lincoln Aviator. And, it happened in January. They told me I couldn't get a window till December. I just wanted to let you know, the Lincoln dealers did nothing for me. The one in Sarasota never even called me back. I was in there three times in person. But anyway, about a month ago, I got a window. So I have to believe that it's your radio show that got me the window.
All right, well, I'll take credit for it, whether I deserve it or not.
Well, it's the only thing, because the guy in Toledo, the dealer up there, he kept telling me every time I called, he would push it back a month. Oh, you're going to get it in March. You're going to get it in April. You're going to get it in May. I called him in May. He says, well, I don't know when you're going to get it. So I think it had to be the radio show.
All right. Well, I'll take full credit for it. Thank you.
All right.
Whether I deserve it or not.
Well, I'm giving you credit. So thanks a lot.
All right. Hey, I remember that question because I thought it was so weird that you couldn't get a windshield, you know, and even the insurance people who provide the companies who do the windshields, I mean, they weren't any help either, were they?
Well, the insurance company immediately authorized OEM windshield, no problem. There was no money issue whatsoever. But the issue was they didn't have windows, they claimed. My question to you was, I thought when you owned a car, when you bought a car, they had to have parts for about 10 years.
You know, I remember one part of the answer I gave you was, well, go ahead and get your windshield replaced with not original equipment windshield under the condition that when that windshield becomes available, you know, in the short-term future, that they'll replace it again, even though it's, you know, you need a windshield. You know, I had a rock with less than the size of a dollar. And that's kind of the criteria they use, but it was in my line of vision on my windshield. So I kind of insisted they replace it, even though it wasn't large enough to really replace. And I didn't want them to try to put glue on it and fix it or anything. So I got my new...
Yeah, I was fortunate.
Yeah, I got my new windshield.
Because it was not in my line of vision.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you so much. Thank you for calling.
All right, well, thanks for your help.
All right, thank you, Jim.
Have a good day.
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, let's go to David calling about some real estate. Hey, David.
Good morning.
Where are you calling from?
Duval County.
Duval, okay.
Yes, and here's my question. There's an opportunity for me to get, and it's just a little small house on a little small piece of land. It's not in the best area, but it's dirt cheap. However, there's a cloud on the title from two owners previous, and the owner who has it now knows of the cloud. It's supposed to fall off in 2027. However, what I was considering was buying it and then going to the owner of that lien and offering them, you know, a settlement, you know, a few thousand or whatever, to release it. And I wanted
to get your opinion. Why don't you offer them the settlement before you close on it and make the closing conditioned upon them accepting the settlement?
Oh, okay. I see what you mean. Well, I know the current owner is not going to go for that because they were trying to sell it as is. But there's absolutely nothing stopping me from.
Are you going around the current owner though?
Right.
And you're getting a contract basically that, you know, you're going to buy this property upon the condition of the lien holder. You can do all this behind the back of the. I'm not trying to do anything devious here, but you want to make a settlement with the lien holder ahead of time. And then you buy it as is, but then you already have a contractual agreement with the lien holder. He'll settle, take $3,000 to settle it or whatever, you know. So then you got the best of both worlds.
Yes, exactly.
You've gotten rid of your cloud.
You must have read the bubble.
Yeah.
Right. You must have been reading the bubble over my head.
Hey, you know, I'm sometimes it's not so good, but a lot of times I answer a question before a client gets a third of the way through. And I don't mean to be disrespectful for the person, but I already know what they're going to ask me and I already know the answer. So I butt in and tell them before they can finish the question, you know? So it's just, that's just.
Right. Yeah, this was kind of obvious, but yeah, that's exactly what I was considering. You know, the house is like across the street and three doors down from my mom. She's in her 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so. I was looking for something where I can be near, but not that near. And it's a cute little house, you know. I mean, it's got a new roof, well, relatively new roof. It's less than 5 years old. It's got aluminum siding on it. It's got some other issues, but the price is dirt cheap. I mean, it's dirt cheap. I can get it for less than what the land costs. So just because the guy's tired of dealing with it, he's had people that have done like a rent-to-own thing, and they've gotten a little bit done, and then couldn't finish. And so he's tired of it. And, you know, we've got a handshake deal. If he's willing to take what he offered me, fine. But I'm going to have that in hand before I do anything for
there
he
you
gets
go.
A dime.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, good luck. Fix it up, and maybe when Mom passes away one day, you'll sell it for a big profit, and then you would be the big winner on that.
Well, that's part of the deal. That's if the Biden administration allows us to continue to have private property. But that's another story. Anyway.
All right. All right, David.
All right, you have a great day, man.
All right,
thanks.
You too, thanks. Hey, you're listening to Ask an Attorney. That's me, Attorney Joe Pippin. If you have a legal question, you have a toll-free number, which is 877-943-9673. Phone lines again at 877-943-9673. And again, phone lines are open. Hey, so one of these questions I was telling you about, the client had two pages of, I don't know, almost 20 questions asking me about before they signed their trust. So the second one was, will your office retain a copy of the estate, meaning all the documents? If so, how long would it be retained? Is there a fee to retain it? So what we do when we finish a will or a trust or any other estate planning documents for a client, we keep an electronic copy. We don't keep paper copies. We keep an electronic copy. And, you know, I have a successor to my firm picked out one day, and all that's kind of been arranged. So the law firm will continue, and we'll continue to maintain and keep copies of documents because questions come up, you know, later. People die. All kind of things different happen, and copies of documents are needed. So we maintain an electronic copy. So the answer to that was yes, we do. When the next question was, when we die, do our beneficiaries, who are also the co-trustees, use the signed estate documents we give them to prove ownership as necessary? In other words, no one will manage the estate except our children, co-trustees, as we requested. Yes, your children in this case would be the co-trustees, and only they, the children, which were co-trustees, have access to your assets through your documents. So basically an example would be you pass away, your trustee or trustees go into the bank where you have an account in the name of the trust. They present a copy of the trust, which a bank should already probably have, copy of your death certificate, their ID, then they become, they're the only ones that can become the trustees in charge of the account. Next question was, as we add assets during our lifetime, are we responsible for making sure the asset is titled in the name of the estate or trust? Yes. You create a trust and you go to a bank and have a new account, then that you should take ownership of the new account in the trust in the name of the trust. And that's how things get in the trust. It's totally how they're funded. Let's go to Tom in Bradenton. Hey, Tom.
Good morning, Joe. Good morning. I have a question regarding title theft. There is an outfit that advertises on radio and elsewhere.
Yeah, Home Lock or something like that.
Home Title Lock.
Or Life, Life Lock, yes.
And I'm wondering how, not prevalent, but I just don't see how, if somebody forges your signature and title transfers, I don't see how that wouldn't be overturned.
It would be.
I'm just wondering how much of a risk there is. Do you really need this home title lock insurance?
All right. Well, the answer is, and actually one of my callers called me and told me they had done some research on it, and there, I don't know, there are 6 or 10 counties, the counties in Florida that offer the service for free, basically. So I don't have a list of the counties with me today, but the counties, you can sign up at the county at no charge, and the county will alert you if there's any activity on your deed. And I think Pinellas and Hillsborough, I'm not sure. You're in Bradenton. I'm not sure about Manatee. Is that you're in Manatee?
Yeah, or, sorry, that's correct.
Yeah. So you could call the clerk of the court in Manatee and see if they have a program where you could be alerted if there's any activity on your title. And there are about 10 counties, and maybe the person who told me all this, he's going to think I'm horrible because I don't have my notes with me of what he told me, but he told me there are about 10 counties in Florida that offer free service on that. So the question, your question is whether you need it. Well, it's a monitoring service, more or less. And then if the monitoring services catch some activity, they alert you, and then you can retain them for more money for them to solve your problem with you, to undo the mess that's caused by the thief who tried to stole your property. You can do your own monitoring service. Some counties offer it for free. Or if you don't want to feel like dealing with that yourself every day going online, if the county doesn't offer it, then they don't charge much, I don't think, to monitor it for you.
Sure.
But you have a choice. You can pay somebody, do it yourself, and sometimes the county does it for free based on what county you live in.
Right. But let's say they do forge your signature, and it's clear that you didn't take out this loan. I mean,
well, it all can be reversed, but now you're stuck with having to pay an attorney or for help to reverse it. But, you know,
it's a matter of a few dollars to have that process reversed by hiring an attorney.
Yeah.
Versus paying probably this company a few hundred dollars to, presumably, take care of the issue for you. I don't see that there's a huge benefit there.
Well, it'd be a lot more. The expenses would be a lot more to unravel it, though.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You know, and basically, can someone do that? Yeah, the answer is, can someone break into your home at night while you're sleeping? Is that right? No. Yes, they can.
Right.
And what you do, you suffer the consequences of whatever they stole, and you have insurance, or you get into, you know, you pull out your gun and shoot them because they've trespassed in your house. And then you might have some issues to deal with that. Oh, most likely not if they broke into your house, but shooting them. But you get just involved in a mess, you know, basically.
Right.
And in today's world, you could shoot somebody and they'll find you responsible for killing them when you should have shot them in the leg or something, you know. So you have all these issues like that. So
I'm thinking, though, I mean, it's not easy to get a mortgage these days, and you've got to have an appraiser come over to give the bank an estimate. How's the appraiser going to get into the house, you know, if I'm living there or if I have a tenant in one of the properties, for example? It just doesn't strike me as though it's going to be easy for them.
Yeah, I know you hear all this commercials that this is the most... The biggest threat in your life right now is somebody stealing your home. I've never had, and we have over 53,000 client base, I've never had a problem with this issue yet. I mean, I've had a few phone calls and wondering whether they should have this LifeLock, HomeLock, whatever program it is, and whether they should pay monthly for the monitoring service. And but I've never had anyone who's faced the loss of their home and dealt with someone who signed a deed, had a fake notary, fake witnesses, forged everything, took over their home, and tried to kick them out of their own home. I've never had a client come anywhere near to close to that. I'm not saying it's not a problem out there. I just never have experienced it to try to help someone get their property back. And it's, to me, it's far-fetched, too. How does a person get away with that, and why would a bank ever give anybody like that money? I don't know. But it's a crime, and thieves can be very clever sometimes, and they do commit clever crimes and get away with stuff for a while anyway.
Presumably, if they were allied with an appraisal firm that was prepared to outright lie and say, oh, yeah, we appraised it, and it's appraised it so-and-so.
Hey, that's what that's what thieves do.
Yeah.
So what do you say? Well, I appreciate you calling, though.
Well, thank you, Joe.
All right, thank you. You're listening to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. Again, I'm Attorney Joe Pippin. We have time for one or two more calls. Phone lines are open at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. And phone lines are open. To get back to my questions, that this couple asked me to explain all of this before they wanted to sign their papers. So here's a couple more. Do we need to change the titles on our current vehicles? No, vehicles don't go into trust. And they don't go through probate generally. So there's no reason to put a car, by the way, should be in one name, the name of the primary driver. I always tell my clients don't own a car jointly between husband and wife because they sue the owners. If the car is in an accident by one driver, then they sue both because you both own the car. So you keep a car in one name, the name of the primary driver. If you have two cars, you'd have one car in one person's name and the other car in the other person's name. And then they can't sue both of you and join in and try to take joint assets. Do you need to change titles on bank accounts? Yes, to the name of the trust. Okay, if an asset is not in the trust name, will it be excluded and not covered under the trust? Of course. If you don't put it in the trust, it's not in the trust, and it would go through probate if it's in a deceased person's name upon death. Since we're leaving everything to our son and daughter 50-50, and they are co-trustees, if either is not living, the 50% will automatically be assigned to their blood relative. That's the language in the trust. In this particular case, it said 50-50, if not living, to their children, issue prosterpes, and if none, to the other. If our son or daughter is not living and they have a minor child, would their 50% automatically be available to the minor child's living parent to use in any way they want? If the son or daughter died and their half went to a minor child, the trustee of the trust named in the trust would be in charge of that money until the child became of whatever age was stated they would get it in the trust. So if they would get it, say, at age 21 or 25, the trustee would hold it until that time. So, Larry, we have a question? No? Okay. So if you have a question you want to call the show in the remaining moments, we have about 5 minutes left, 877-943-9673. Let's go to Susan in Clearwater.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
Appreciate your show. Really enjoy listening to it. I'm a musician at a church, and so as that, I'm required to be in the sanctuary in order to perform my duties. Our church is requiring that all people who enter the sanctuary be vaccinated. The governor has issued his or passed his bill saying that there should be no vaccine mandate. The church governing body is saying that doesn't matter. The governor has no say in what they do. What is your take on that? Are they breaking the law? Can they still require the vaccine?
Well, I think, that's a tough question that's going to be litigated here in the near future, I'm sure. And I'm not sure there's a black and white answer that I could give that would be absolutely correct without being challenged, and the court will eventually have to decide. I think generally a business, or in this case a church, has a right to make certain laws of the businesses of who they let in, or a church of how they want their congregation to act. And I think for now they have a right to implement those laws, is my general opinion. I think all of that is changing pretty quickly as what's happened in the last week with the governor. And, we went into a restaurant last night up here in Jacksonville, and they had strict requirements about wearing masks, at least entering into before you sit down at the table, and all the servers had on masks. Well, they had the restaurant completely changed everything, how they operated on that, and no masks were required by anybody last night in the restaurant that we went to.
The critical issue, as far as I'm concerned, is why does anyone else have the right to tell you what you put in your body?
Because they are responsible and could be sued for not implementing laws for the safety of others in the same building or area. And they have liabilities that way, so they want to be super cautious and take precautions to where they're not going to be sued by other people who might say you should have done this, and because you didn't do this, I got sick. I mean, so it's you have to look at it from both sides, I think.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
Yeah, I know, but I would think for now they would have the right to impose that and try to enforce that. And, there might be another church down the road where it doesn't have that. And, if you don't agree basically with whatever's going on in your church, you have the right to try another church. I mean, so you
don't... It's not a question of just attending. It's a question of being on the staff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think as a staff member, you would be even more subject to the rules that they would make as an employee. Because I think they have the right to as an employee. And not speaking of just the church, because that's a little bit different, but businesses have the right to fire people basically, unless it's discrimination, because they want to. I mean, all right. Hey, so that's my music. I got to go. But thanks so much for calling. I'd love to talk to you about it further. Maybe call me next week. And thanks for listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. You all be safe and have a great weekend. So long.